Chapter 23. The stout oaks and elms of the forest grew closer to the road the farther south they traveled, eventually giving way to spindly cypresses as the lush grass turned to muddy water. Where the hard-packed earth and road stopped and the wide cypress-planked boardwalk began, an old weather-beaten wooden sign greeted the party. "Welcome to Port Town."
"We should dismount," said Dave.
The boardwalk appeared sturdy, supported by living cypress trees on both sides, and wide enough for a large wagon to travel on, but he didn't want to take any chances. The last thing he needed was to fall through and be trapped underwater under a panicky horse. Julian nodded.
"Their spell duration is about to run out anyway."
He pointed at the sign on the side of the road.
"We should take that, too."
"The sign?" asked Stacy. "What do we need that for?"
"We need to start taking souvenirs wherever we go," Julian explained. "If Chaz fails to tell everyone where we are, or if we've gone somewhere else by the time help arrives, they can find us by looking at the inventory on our character sheets."
"Not a terrible idea," said Tony the Elf. "But what will you tell people who question you for carrying around obviously stolen city property?"
"Two of us could carry it together facing down," said Dave.
He didn't really like the idea of backing one of Julian's crazy schemes, but Tony the Elf needed to be taken down a notch.
"Nobody would even know."
Tony the Elf shook his head.
"You two fools do whatever you want. As long as we're just wasting time, I'm going to give my feet a rest."
He sat down on a wide-capped cypress knee and began to remove his boots. Julian nodded at Dave.
"Thanks."
Dave nodded.
"Sure. Couldn't we just go to, like, a souvenir shop or something?" asked Stacy.
Julian laughed, which surprised Dave, as it was the exact sort of suggestion he'd expect to come out of Julian's mouth. Maybe he was finally learning the ropes.
"Where do you think we are?"
asked Tony the Elf.
"Disney World?"
"I was just trying to be helpful."
"Maybe we could find some cool keyring or one of those caps with the Mickey Mouse ears."
"Keep talking, Tony the Elf," said Stacy. "Maybe you'll find my foot in your ass."
Julian raised his hand like he was trying to get the teacher's attention.
"Hey guys, come on, keep it civil. If we find something smaller, more portable when we get into the city, we'll ditch the sign."
He grabbed the top left corner of the sign.
"Grab the other side, Dave. On three, we'll both give it a good hard yank."
Dave grabbed the bottom right corner and prepared to yank.
"One, two."
"What do you two think you're doing with that sign?"
said an older man's voice from behind Dave. Julian looked past Dave.
"Jesus!"
He quickly let go of the sign.
Nothing, sir. It looked crooked, so we were straightening it out."
Dave turned around and saw a naked old man standing on the road. He looked like a fat David Attenborough who life hadn't been kind to.
"It doesn't look crooked to me,"
Julian forced a cheerful grin.
"You're welcome."
"This sign has stood there since before I was born," said the naked old man,
the tip of his withered old dick peeking out from a snow-white tangle of pubes.
"Before Cardinia opened the harlot legs of her own seaport, back when this place meant something. Port Town may have fallen under hard times, but I'll not stand here and watch her be vandalized by outsiders."
He walked toward the sign as Julian and Dave backed away, stretched his arms up in the air, and sprayed a jet of steamy, foul-smelling piss on one of the posts that held it up. As he continued to saturate the post, he looked at Julian and pointed at his own piss stream.
"Do you know what this means, boy?"
Julian shrugged, trying not to gag at the pungent odor.
"I don't know, sir. Urinary tract infection?"
The old man redirected his stream to the other signpost.
"It means that this is my town. You got that?"
"Yes, sir."
"Who won't tolerate any other cats?"
"Cats?"
The old man ceased pissing and walked nakedly toward Julian, whose face was locked in a fight-or-flight struggle.
"Now come here and let me smell you."
"What? No!"
But it was too late. The old man gripped Julian by both arms and sniffed at his face and under each arm.
"Yeah,"
said the man, releasing Julian and turning toward Stacy.
"Is it you?"
Stacy took a step back.
"I'm warning you, sir. Do not touch me," the old man snarled.
"Aye, stand still then, so I can smell you."
I suppose that's a fair compromise."
He sniffed at her face, but nothing in his face or his dong showed any sign of arousal.
"Lift your arms."
Stacy reluctantly acquiesced, allowing the crazy old bastard to sniff each pit to his satisfaction.
"This is starting to make me feel uncomfortable."
"Which one of you is it?"
He started walking toward Tony the Elf, who was quickly relacing his boots. Dave the dog snarled and barked as he approached.
"Take it easy, Dave," said Tony the Elf. "We seek no trouble."
He raised his arms.
Just smell me and be on your way.
Aye, said the old man. I'll be on my way once I find the pussy I smelled.
Stacy gasped.
I beg your pardon.
Dave couldn't tell if she was more offended by the naked man's crude language or because she'd already been ruled out. The old man ignored her, concentrating on thoroughly sniffing Tony the Elf.
Bah!
He said, evidently unsatisfied with the amount of pussy coming from Tony the Elf's armpits. He snarled as he surveyed the scene until he locked eyes with Dave.
You! Halfbeard!
Dave had grown accustomed to being ignored or forgotten, and had considered it a blessing in this case, but now he'd been rediscovered. The man moved quickly and excitedly toward Dave, like maybe he was interested in more than a friendly sniff.
Please! Cried Dave. No!
He shielded his face with his forearms as the crazy naked man bounded toward him.
Aha!
Said the old man, grabbing Dave roughly by his left forearm.
I know pussy when I smell one! Explain yourself, dwarf!
Dave was dumbstruck with confusion, but felt compelled to at least try and beg for his life.
I'm sorry for being such a pussy. It's just that my legs are short, and I'm always the last one to fight. Please don't kill me! Have you lost your fool mind, boy?
Dave considered pointing out the irony in the question, but pussied out.
What? I'm not interested in your legs, said the old man, shaking Dave's arm vigorously in front of his face. What's this on your arm? Are you a were-leopard?
Dave had had enough. He yanked his arm away.
Of course I'm not a were-leopard. What kind of question is that? Who the hell are you?
The old man puffed out his wrinkly, sagging, pale chest.
I'm Dugan Merriweather, mayor of Port Town.
Is that an elected position? Asked Stacy. Mr. Merriweather ignored her, his mad eyes still focused on the band of leopard fur on Dave's arm.
Now explain that arm, son! You don't want to anger me!
This guy had some nerve. Sure, he was kind of terrifying at first. The shock of a naked old man showing up out of nowhere and demanding to sniff everyone is bound to throw anyone off their game. But that shock had passed now. He was elderly, unarmed, naked, and outnumbered. He wasn't in a position to demand anything. Dave put his fists on his hips.
I don't have to explain shit to you, you crazy old bastard. Go piss on a post.
Dave!
Shouted Stacy and Julian simultaneously. Tony the Elf just shook his head. Dugan Merriweather glared at Dave, the whites of his eyes turning yellow. Orange, white, and black fur sprouted out all over his face and body as he grew and changed shape. His fingernails and toenails grew into claws. His face became more feline, his mouth spreading wide in what looked like a maniacal grin as his teeth grew sharp and pointed. Dave's bladder emptied into his armor.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Merriweather,
Dave blubbered.
I'll tell you anything you want. But my arm got hurt when a leopard attacked me. I didn't have any healing spells on me, so my friend patched up the wound with some leopard skin. When I healed my arm the next morning, I accidentally grafted the leopard skin onto my arm.
The giant tiger man hybrid in front of Dave nodded once, then morphed back into his naked old man form.
Fascinating, said Mr. Merriweather. That wasn't so hard, now was it?
Julian and Stacy were gawking. Dave the dog cowered behind Tony the Elf, who was glaring at Dave.
That was amazing, said Stacy. Are you a... I don't even know the right word.
I'm a were-tiger.
That's so cool.
I apologize if I gave you a bit of a fright, said Mr. Merriweather. I have a tendency to be overly territorial.
He gave Dave a stern look.
And I don't tolerate sass talk from youngsters.
Dave's heart skipped a beat.
I'm sorry, sir.
So that explains why you don't wear clothes, said Stacy.
That is correct, miss.
You can call me Stacy.
That is correct, Miss Stacy. I usually do my patrols in tiger form, but I approached you all in human form so as not to alarm you.
Of course, said Tony the Elf. I can't think of anything less alarming than being sniffed by a naked old man.
You mind that cess talk, boy?
Said Mr. Merriweather, pointing at Tony the Elf. He turned back to Stacy and spoke in a more jovial tone.
It's also the only form I'm able to speak in. Are you folks hungry?
Dave was hungry as hell, but he held his tongue. Likewise, Tony the Elf's and Stacy's eyes were both screaming, yes, yes, yes. But they deferred the question to Julian, who had the most to lose by lollygagging. Julian nodded.
It would be my honor to buy you lunch, Mayor Merriweather. I'd love to know more about your town.
Mr. Merriweather smiled broadly, swallowing Julian's diplomacy bait.
That sounds delightful. Oh no, just the place. Follow me.
And just like that, he morphed into an actual tiger. His striped tail swaying like a charmed snake, he started walking down the cypress boardwalk. Port Town,
was not a city for dwarves or for people in heavy armor, or especially for dwarves in heavy armor. The entire town was on the water. The town's buildings were just miniature barges tied to the expanse of boardwalk which formed the streets. From the looks of it, Dave imagined the whole city could disband at a moment's notice, leaving behind only a network of piers to bewilder any future travelers who happened to wander upon it. Atop the flat roof of each of these buildings was a garden, boasting a rainbow of colorful vegetables. Citizens stopped what they were doing to wave at the tiger walking before Dave's group.
"Good afternoon, Mayor Merriweather! How do you do, sir?
Merry weather we're having today, wouldn't you say, Mayor?"
To each, the mayor responded with a nod or a low, rumbling growl. Human and half-elven children hopped down from their parents' rooftop gardens to run their fingers through the mayor's fur, provoking a purr that should have had each of them shitting themselves. Dave didn't care much for kids, but he had to force himself more than once to refrain from saying, "What are you crazy little bastards thinking? Don't you know that's a man-eating wild animal?" At the end of the main avenue floated a barge much larger than the other ones, about 20 yards wide and 2 stories tall. The sign over the main entrance read, "Merriweather Inn." Clearly, the family had their furry paws in more than just politics. 2 of the windows on the 2nd story of the Merriweather Inn had blackened frames, as if they had recently been burned. Workers wearing scarves over their noses and mouths were prying off burnt pieces of wood.
"Trouble at the inn?" asked Stacy.
Mayor Merriweather let out a sharper, more terrifying growl, bordering on a roar, which nearly caused Dave to soil his armor again, but merely sent all the kids scampering happily away. When the kids were gone, the mayor turned down a side pier and morphed into his human form.
"Hey, there was trouble at the inn. Band of ruffians coming yesterday evening, all full of sass talk."
His visible annoyance of the memory quickly faded.
"But never you mind that. Prepare yourselves for the finest grilled fish to ever grace your gullet. Now I'll be in tiger form, as it's not proper for me to dine like this. But don't you worry, One-Eyed Pete will take care of you."
Without waiting for a response, he took his tiger form and continued his way along the pier. The barge they entered was longer than most and boasted one of the more impressive vegetable gardens on top. A steady tendril of smoke flowed out of a chimney at the far end.
"Fisherman's Hole," said Stacy, reading the sign above the door. "Something in there smells good."
She wasn't wrong. The mingling scents of grilled fish, hot peppers, and sea salt incited a rumble in Dave's stomach to rival the mayor's growl.
"Mayor Merriweather," said a kindly old woman's voice. "What a pleasant surprise. Come on in."
Dave followed Mayor Merriweather into the floating tavern, and the rest of the group followed behind him. The heavyset elven woman behind the bar had streaks of gray running through her brown hair, but her plump face remained youthful.
"I see you've brought some guests," she said, watching as the rest of the group shuffled in.
She turned to the far end of the tavern.
"Pete, throw some more fish on the grill and bring out the mayor's bucket."
"Righto, Maisie,"
came an old man's voice from the kitchen.
"You good people make yourselves at home," said the elf woman, Maisie. "Pete'll bring you some food in just a minute. Can I get you something to drink?"
Dave was about to respond, but the mayor cut him off with a sharp growl.
"Oh, right away, Mr. Mayor."
Dave, Stacy, Julian, and Tony the Elf sat in chairs around a round wooden table. Dave the dog lay down behind Tony the Elf's chair, and Mayor Merriweather sprawled out on the floor next to the table. They all sat quietly for a moment until Julian couldn't wait any longer.
"This band of ruffians you mentioned earlier, how many did you say there were?"
The mayor looked up at him, snarling softly as if to say, "You know I can't talk when I'm a tiger," but then reconsidered. He held up a front paw and extended 4 long white claws.
"4?
Asked Julian. Mayor Merriweather nodded and retracted his claws. Stacy leaned in to whisper to the others at the table.
"That's one less than we saw in the wagon, including the driver."
Tony the Elf tapped his fingers on the table.
"You may have interrupted his recruitment. That's good. If we can keep him on the run, we might keep him from gaining as much in the way of followers and experience points as he would left to his own devices."
"Hope you folks are hungry,"
said a man, bursting in through the kitchen door, carrying a platter of sizzling grilled fish in one hand and a massive bucket of raw fish in the other. His smile was as friendly as a man wearing an eye patch and an apron covered in blood could hope to offer. He placed the fish platter on the table and the bucket on the floor next to the mayor, who wasted no time gulping back an entire 2-foot-long tuna.
Dave hoped his assumptions were correct, that this man was One-Eyed Pete, and that the blood on his apron had once belonged to fish.
"And thirsty," said Maisie.
She had a tray of tall cups made from the stalks of very thick bamboo and a large wooden bowl. She placed it on the table next to the fish platter. The cups and bowl were full of beer. She placed one cup in front of Dave and each of his companions and placed the bowl on the floor next to the mayor's fish bucket. Dave noticed words engraved at the bottom of each cup. He took a closer look at his own. The small but carefully etched letters spelled Fisherman's Hole. He sipped his beer, light and fruity. Not a bad flavor at all, but nothing he'd be able to get drunk on. The mayor took a break from devouring fish to lap up some beer from his bowl. Maisie pulled a bunch of wooden chopsticks out of the front pocket of her apron, much cleaner than her husband's, and passed them around. Then she reached into another pocket and pulled out a handful of dried sardines. She crouched down below the table.
"Don't think I forgot about you."
She tossed the sardines to Dave the dog, who happily accepted them.
"Thank you, ma'am," said Tony the elf. "You're most generous."
"What brings you folks to Port Town?"
Whether she was genuinely interested or merely suspicious, the question sounded more sincere than the typical pointless small talk Dave was used to hearing from tip-hungry waitresses.
"We're looking for someone," said Julian.
He looked down at the mayor, who was tearing a tuna in two with his claws and mouth.
"Mr. Mayor, did you notice anything peculiar about these ruffians?"
Mayor Merriweather's responding growl didn't sound friendly, and he remained focused on the task of tearing his fish apart.
"Best not bother the mayor while he's eating, son," said One-Eyed Pete. "There'll be plenty of time for talk once you've had your supper. Now go on and eat your fish before it gets cold."
"Of course," said Julian. "I beg your pardon, Mayor Merriweather."
Dave had to admit the mayor was right. This was some fantastic grilled fish, peppery and flaky with a hint of lemon. He thought he could eat this every day of his life and never want for another food. Of course, he'd been hungry enough to eat his own boots before he started, so they may have enhanced the flavor as well. Before long, they were all sitting around a pile of fish bones, completely picked clean of meat, while the mayor stretched out on his back next to an empty bowl and bucket. Julian raised his eyebrows at the rest of the table. Stacy and Tony the elf nodded their approval. Julian cleared his throat.
"Mayor Merry!
Mayor Merriweather!"
cried a young half-elf who just stormed in through the door carrying a bundle of blue fabric.
"Thank the gods, I've found you!"
He rushed over to the mayor and unfolded the cloth, revealing it to be a robe. Mayor Merriweather morphed into his human form and wrapped himself in the robe.
"What is it, Piper?"
"It's Dylan Swan, sir. He's climbed up the crow's nest of the second wind again. Says he's going to jump if Mary Stillwater won't take him back."
"Drunken fool," grumbled the mayor. "These sorts of shenanigans are exactly the reason she left him in the first place. A pretty girl like that can do much better for herself than a degenerate, sash-talking drunk like him. And why does he always choose my boat to host his theatrics?"
"I can only speculate, sir. Yours is the tallest in the harbor, which amplifies the dramatics."
"It's not that tall. He's like to do more damage to my boat than he does to himself."
"Also, he probably counts on you to come get him down, so he won't have to make good on his threat."
The mayor nodded.
"He'd better not. If he survives the jump, I'll make him wish he hadn't."
He turned to Dave's table.
"I'm sorry to cut this short, new friends. Seems a mayor's work is never done."
"But,"
said Julian. He was too late. Mayor Merriweather and his assistant were already out the door.
"Well, shit."
"Mind your tongue, son," said One-Eyed Pete. "There are ladies present."
"I'm so sorry,"
said Julian, balancing his diplomacy against his frustration.
"I was out of line."
Maisie smiled at him.
"What's this urgent business you have with the mayor anyway? Who are you looking for?"
Julian sighed.
"The mayor mentioned some ruffians who rode into town yesterday evening. It may be one of them."
"They were a strange lot," said Maisie.
Julian perked up.
"Did you see them?"
"Not personally, but nothing stays a secret in Port Town for long."
She pulled a chair over from another table and sat down to share her gossip.
"I heard these fellows rode into town like they owned the place. The leader up and demanding passage by ship right then and there. But there weren't any boats scheduled to leave until this morning."
"They say he used words I won't repeat," said One-Eyed Pete. "And some I just plain didn't understand."
Maisie put her hands on her hips.
"But he changed his tone once Mayor Merriweather took his hybrid form."
Dave gulped.
"I can believe that."
"So they left this morning," said Stacy, "on a boat."
"On four boats," said Maisie.
"They left their room at the inn one at a time, each boarding a boat bound for different destinations."
Tony the Elf bit his lower lip.
Decoys. He sent his lackeys off in different directions so that we'd have to choose between splitting our own party or gambling on a 25% chance of following the right lead. Did you hear anything about one of these guys carrying a bird?
Asked Julian. One-eyed Pete and Maisie looked at one another, then shook their heads.
Don't recall hearing anything about a bird, said One-eyed Pete. But all of them were said to be carrying so many bags that they could scarcely walk down the pier.
Maisie shook her head.
That's no way to live your life. Shackling yourself to material possessions will only slow you down.
So what happened at the inn? Asked Stacy.
Maisie grimaced.
Well, it seems the last of them didn't take kindly to being told what's what by Mayor Merriweather the day before, so he decided to leave something for the town to remember them by.
One-eyed Pete pounded the table with his fist.
He set a fire elemental loose in this room just before he left and boarded his boat, the coward!
Calm yourself, dear.
Maisie put her hand on her husband's shoulder and addressed the rest of the table.
It wasn't as bad as it could have been. Thank the gods Mayor Merriweather was here in town, rather than out on one of his fool border patrol missions. Everything his great-great-great-grandfather worked so hard for might have been burnt to ashes.
Dave tried to imagine the scene.
A were-tiger fighting a fire elemental? I wish I could have been able to see it.
One-eyed Pete shrugged.
Wasn't much of a spectacle. He just turned into a tiger and tackled the thing through the window. The seawater snuffed it right out.
Tony the Elf tapped his fingers impatiently on the table.
We need to figure out which one of these guys is the real Mordred.
If they left one at a time, Stacy reasoned, then Mordred was probably in the biggest hurry to get away.
Or he could have been the last guy, said Tony the Elf. He might have felt betrayed, being intimidated by something he thought of as his own creation. Burning down the inn and running away sounds just like the sort of thing that Mordred might consider worth hanging around for.
Julian looked at One-Eyed Pete.
Do you know where each of these boats were headed?
One-Eyed Pete rubbed his chin.
If I recall correctly, the first of them was headed west for Portland.
Tony the Elf smirked and shook his head, no doubt thinking about Mordred's lack of imagination when naming the seaports of his fantasy world.
And the second one, I believe, was sailing south to Port City.
Stacy and Julian also smiled quietly to themselves.
The third boat was bound for Portsville.
Everyone at the table, except for the co-owners of the establishment, laughed like bursting dams.
Where was the fourth boat going?
Asked Stacy.
Portugal?
Were they on an important mission?
Asked Tony the Elf. Julian wasn't laughing anymore, clearly anxious to get back to the task of tracking down Mordred and, of course, Ravenous. But Dave had just thought of a port pun that he didn't want to go to waste.
Was it captained by Mr. Port Tato Head?
Nothing but stares and silence. If laughter was people, Dave would be a war criminal.
The fourth boat,
said a visibly bewildered One-Eyed Pete,
was headed for Meb Garshur.
Oh, said Stacy. Meb Garshur sounds exotic.
That's no place for a pretty young girl like you, dear.
Maisie's voice was grave with warning.
If all they did to you was murder and eat you, you could count yourself among the lucky ones.
Is it really that bad?
Stay away from that place, child. It's a cursed land. You'll find nothing in Meb Garshur but orcish barbarians.
Or even worse, whispered One-Eyed Pete, leaning in. He might even find Timon's tomb.
His eye was wide as he let the last word linger a bit.
I'm giving the girl a serious warning, snapped Maisie. Now's not the time to go filling her heads with silly fishermen's tales.
How can you say it's silly? Asked One-Eyed Pete. That legend is older than either of us.
Exactly. I'm 300 years older than you, and no one took it seriously when I was young.
Excuse me, said Stacy. The place is so evil. Why do you have boats going there?
King Winston the Wise opened up trade in an effort to strengthen peace along the border.
Winston the Weak? Pish to the fool king and his peace, said Maisie. How can you call that trade? We give them grain and corn to keep their armies well fed and lumber to construct their siege weapons.
What siege weapons?
And what do they give us in return? Poisonous herbs to weaken us for when they finally decide to invade.
One-Eyed Pete smiled.
She disapproves of my smoking.
Invade? Said Tony the Elf.
One-Eyed Pete rolled his eyes.
There's not going to be any invasion. There are at least 100 different barbarian tribes down there, all too busy fighting one another.
Pish, said Maisie. Open your eyes, old fool. The invasion's already begun. Just look at Shallow Grave. That used to be a thriving district of Cardinia until it was overrun by dark races.
Stacy cleared her throat.
Can we maybe use a different term than dark races? And what's shallow grave?
One-Eyed Pete glanced at his wife, satisfied that she was going to allow him to field the question. He turned to Stacy.
Another part of the king's peace plan was to invite anyone who swore allegiance to the realm to live in Cardinia. It has not been one of his more popular actions among the common folk. Most who took him up on his offer have been orcs, and most of them settled in the part of the city known as Shallow Grave. But as much as people worry, I have not heard tell of any more crime of violence in Shallow Grave than in the rest of the city.
You mark my words, said Maisie. They're biding their time. When the invasion comes, King Winston the Weasel will see his once great city gutted from the inside.
A moment of silence passed. There was only so long anyone could stand to argue with a possibly racist 400-year-old woman. Tony the Elf cleared his throat.
Ahem. I'd like to know more about Timon's tomb.
Pish, said Maisie, standing up.
With all the real problems in the world, you youngsters only want to concern yourselves with spooky fishermen's tales. Well, some of us have work to do.
She retreated behind the bar and started aggressively washing some dishes. One-Eyed Pete grinned.
Don't mind her none. She grew up in the aftermath of the War of the Fractured Kingdom. She still remembers the raids and the ransoms.
He looked at Tony the Elf.
Now, lad, how is it an adult elf has lived so long without hearing of Timon the Terrible or the legendary elf Simon Swiftheart? Did your father never tell you these tales?
My parents died when I was very young, said Tony the Elf. They were eaten by bears.
Players could make up any kind of bullshit to avoid having to write a complicated backstory for their character. Dave didn't realize he was laughing out loud until he once again felt everyone's eyes on him.
I'm sorry, I was thinking of something else.
Another giggle bubbled up, which Dave failed to pass off as a hiccup. He stood up.
I'm just gonna go to the bathroom for a while.
He hurried out of the floating tavern and took a walk along the pier. Thanks to Mayor Merriweather, Dave's bathroom needs had already been taken care of. He just needed some air. In no hurry to make a further fool of himself, he wandered along the maze of piers and was soon enjoying this oddly quaint town. The sea air felt good in his lungs. It was as close to Gulfport, familiarity-wise, he'd ever felt in this world. He looked out at the vast, calm sea and imagined that on the other side of it, he might find Cancun, rather than some orc-infested shithole wasteland. Dave passed a little shop called Leeches and Lures, which struck him as kind of horrifying, until it occurred to him that it was probably a bait shop. Fishing sounded nice. He'd have to tell Julian about this place. Even if they didn't have the sorts of souvenirs he was looking for, having some fishing gear suddenly appear in their inventory might hint that they were on the coast. He decided that he had better head back to join the others again so they wouldn't think he'd fallen in the water and drowned. The others were exiting the fisherman's hole as Dave approached.
You guys get anything?
Asked Dave. Julian held up two of the bamboo cups.
I bought these. The name of the place is engraved on the bottom.
He shrugged.
Better than nothing, I guess.
I was talking about information,
said Dave.
Did Timon's tomb turn up or anything?
It's just your standard fantasy bullshit, said Tony the Elf. Evil king obsessed with immortality, betrayals, vows of vengeance, phantom ship, yada yada yada. About as original as you'd expect from someone who came up with Port Town, Portsville, and Port City.
And Mebgar Shur, said Stacy.
She froze.
Oh my god, that's it! Mordred's going to Mebgar Shur!
Tony the Elf rolled his eyes.
Take it down a notch, rookie. You heard the elf lady. Even One-Eyed Pete didn't really seem to believe the story. This is how people entertain themselves before television.
Au contraire, mon frère!
Stacy was not taking it down a notch. She was giddy with excitement.
Television is exactly what I'm talking about. Have you ever seen a movie or TV show in which people were talking about some creepy old legend, joking about how only a fool would believe in it, and they turned out to be right?
Julian shook his head.
I can't think of any. The guy joking about it is always the first to get killed off.
Tony the Elf's eyes were no longer rolling.
Mordred would know exactly where to find the hiding place of Timon's eternal beating heart, because he's the one who hid it.
Stacy folded her arms.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd know the location of the tomb and the altar and all the details of the forgotten rites of resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
An undead Lich King hell-bent on destroying Cardinia could unite the orcish barbarian tribes.
Stacy looked admiringly at her fingernails.
Not bad for a rookie.
Why would he do that?
How the heck should I know?
Asked Stacy.
Because he's an asshole.
He wants to kill us, said Dave. We're the only ones here who know his true self. With us out of the way, nobody will know he's a big phony.
He'd kill all of those innocent people for that?
None of these are people to him. They're sets of statistics on a sheet of paper. He made them. He can unmake them.
We have to stop him, said Tony the Elf. Julian frowned. There won't be any boats leaving until tomorrow.
Tony the Elf tugged on his ears.
What can we do?
Dave cleared his throat and pointed his thumb over his shoulder.
I saw a bait shop back that way,